The co-pilot of that crashed German Wings plane, Andreas Lubitz, had received treatment for suicidal tendencies before getting his pilot's license. That according to investigators earlier today. Lubitz, 27, of course, is suspected of deliberately crashing that plane into the French Alps, killing all 150 people on board last week. But according to the public prosecutor in Dusseldorf, he says that evidence now exists that for several years before Lubitz became a pilot, he had at the time been in treatment by a psychotherapist for what is being documented as suicidal tendencies or thoughts. Dr. Oren Amate is a psychologist, and he joins us to discuss further here on Talk Radio in Toronto, AM 640. Dr. Amate, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Jeff.
All right, first off, I know you can't speak obviously in specifics, but just in generalities, I'm sure you've dealt with over the years, people who've been depressed, had suicidal thoughts. Just because they're thinking these sort of things, going through those emotions, does that necessarily mean that they're going to act them out or carry through with them?
No, definitely not. But we should never assume that if someone talks about it, that they're not going to.
Okay, so do you think that perhaps the airline has got some sort of culpability here, that they should have known that this was in Lubitz's background or in his past?
Well, yeah, I mean, if he was seeing somebody for this, and I'm kind of torn about this because, you know, I spend a lot of my time trying to destigmatize mental health issues, so we don't want to overreact. But if somebody has a history of, you know, suicidal ideation, or I believe he had at least one suicidal attempt, I'm not quite sure, but and they're in a position where they could cause, you know, obviously severe harm to themselves or to others, I think that there should be some safeguards put in place.
Okay, because part of the problem, as we discussed late last week on the show, is that these pilots are on the honor system, the so-called honor system, that they're to bring this to the attention of the airline and say, listen, I'm going through this, I'm not feeling right, I'm not feeling good right now. But a lot of people, as you say, because of the stigma of mental health or mental illness, have got a real problem doing that, particularly with their employers.
Exactly, and in particular in a case like this where they might, you know, such a disclosure, I don't know if it would lead to suspension, you know, to firing, not being able to get a job in their profession. I think that there should be a system in place where the person is encouraged to disclose these matters, and instead of losing their job, you know, they are encouraged to get the help that they need so that they can continue functioning within society and within their professional role.
And one has to wonder aloud, Doctor, whether or not this did play a role, because from all accounts, this Lubitz, this was his life's dream, was to be a pilot. He'd been fascinated with air travel and airplanes since he was a kid, since he was a little boy. And if this stuff came to light, no wonder he wouldn't come forward to his employers with it, because he would lose his dream.
Exactly. And, you know, I can empathize with that because, like I said, we don't want to, you know, to prevent people from living a full life because of mental health issues. But we do need to balance that with the safety of the public. And in that kind of profession, you know, whether the person has suicidal tendencies or whether they have substance abuse issues, if they're in a position where they can cause, you know, severe damage to the public, I think we have to have certain safeguards, which once again balances the needs of the people that we're trying to help.
Right, so where is that balance, do you think, Doctor? Is the system tipped too far right now in the favor of privacy over public safety?
I'm not quite sure because, you know, in my own clinical experience, I've had a number of people who, even though they're supposed to be assured of privacy and they're not in positions where they could, you know, like drive a bus or fly an airplane, it's just a regular position, but they feel that even though they're supposed to be safeguards to protect their privacy, that in actual practice, it doesn't play out that way.
Right. Should there be a list of, I don't know, occupations in which you've got people's lives literally in the palm of your hands, whether it be an airline pilot or maybe a surgeon, that if you are dealing with this sort of thing, clinical depression, suicidal tendencies or thoughts, that it needs to be reported to your employer?
I would say yes, as long as, once again, that there are no sanctions against the person. At the worst case scenario, they're taking a paid absence of leave or, you know, a reduced pay like we do have. And we have long-term disability. We do have systems in place where people, if they aren't doing well, depending on their company, that they have some coverage that allows them to take the time they need to do better. But in these kind of positions where, yeah, you have someone's life in your hands, and this surgeon's example is perfect. Many doctors, unfortunately, unfortunately don't have the insight or the ability to say, you know what, I actually have problems, because they spend most of their professional life being in a position of a leadership, of power, and to acknowledge that they're not in that position psychologically at the time, it's very difficult to do that. So I would hope that they would be encouraged to reflect on how they're functioning, not just doctors, but anybody in those positions, and would know that if they do the right thing and seek help, nothing bad will come of it.
Well, and there we get to, down to that issue of balance once again here, because you're absolutely right, because of the stigma of mental illness. You know, if somebody does come forward, that's Lubitz in this case, and tells German Wings, listen, I've had this in the past, I'm feeling it again, he's got to feel as if he's pretty much automatically disqualified. And listen, I'm not trying to justify this guy's behavior, obviously, but just trying to somehow get inside his head and figure out what went on, what happened last week. But he's got to figure, if he reveals this stuff, he's pretty much done as a pilot.
Exactly. And, you know, if today with all the record keeping and so on, even though we're supposed to have safeguards that protect our confidentiality, I'm sure that he believed that if, you know, for any reason he was let go by his current employer, that if he ever tried to get another job in the industry, that that would follow him.
Right. And but as we mentioned off the top here, just because a patient is going through this or experiencing it at the time doesn't necessarily mean that they can't get over it through rehab and work with somebody such as yourself, or that they necessarily will even go through with it. I mean, a lot of people can talk about having these feelings of suicide, but not necessarily ever want to go through with it.
Exactly. And I've worked with a number of clients and patients who have, told me about their suicidal ideation, intention, attempts. And, you know, talking about it does not mean that they're necessarily going to do it. And talking about it does sometimes provide them with a way to actually examine themselves and their situation, so that, and it can help reduce their feeling that that's the only way out. And that's what's really important, the sense of hopelessness. That's the number one predictor. The two things that are predicted is, number one, a feeling of hopelessness that this is never going to end. I have no way out. There's no way to better my situation. And then number two, we know that if we talk with them and they have a really set plan, they have details, and they can tell you, I've got the means, and this is how I'm going to do it, and it's at my disposal, that predicts it. And I've had people even in those situations, and by talking about it, we've been able to keep, you know, prevent them from acting on these intentions.
Couple last things here. One thing we have not discussed, and this has also come to light throughout the day today, is that Lubitz apparently was suffering from vision problems, something else that would also limit, if not end, his career and his dream as a pilot. And when you talk about taking away all sense of hope, if he thinks, you know, I've got this on record of been diagnosed as being depressed, having suicidal tendencies or thoughts, now I've got these vision problems, do you think maybe that's taken away all that so-called hope of him continuing on in his career, his dream career?
I could certainly think so. I mean, as you're saying, that this was his dream, his whole life he wanted to do this, and then trying to imagine the rest of his life without it, I could see that as being that hopeless factor.
Sure. And just finally, are we asking too much of the doctor who was treating him? Through your experience, is there any way to know, as we were just discussing, there are people that would talk about it but not necessarily go through it. Is it impossible for a doctor or somebody who is analyzing, working with somebody like Lubitz to know if they truly would do it and not only, you know, bring harm to themselves, commit suicide, but take others with them?
Yeah, this is very difficult, and, you know, we're ethically obliged to, you know, if we ever believe that someone's at imminent risk to themselves or to others, we're supposed to take the proper step. Now, in America, it's a legal obligation, it's called the Tarasov Law, where we're supposed to, contact anybody that could help prevent this from happening. But in Canada, it's more of a guideline, and it's a tough call. It's a judgment call, and, you know, it's a tough question as to whether we err on the side of caution and report the person, which, unfortunately, if you do that, you risk severing the relationship with them, and you might be their only hope at this time to help them, and now they feel they can't even trust you. And if they can't trust you, the person they've been working with and opened up to, and then you turn around and stab them in the back, that's how they would see it, potentially. How would they trust anybody else? How would they get the help they need?
Well, not only that, but do therapists, psychologists and such, do they not operate on the hope of the patient getting getting better all the time? They've always got that kind of glass half full outlook when it comes to a patient?
We would like to. Yeah, we do. But once again, we have to then also consider our obligation to society at large. And if someone, you know, someone says to me that I'm going to go out and, you know, they say kill themselves and they are going to take out a specific person, I know, you know, how they're going to do it, then I have an obligation to report it. So it's only in those, you know, really specific cases where we know that they are intending to do it and we know how they're going to do it, or at least, you know, who's at risk, that we're obliged to, you know, to report them. So it's a tough call. I fortunately have not had to make that call. I've been able to talk with the people, and you know, when people have mentioned these kinds of concerns, and I've been able to sort of, to quote unquote talk them down from it.
Dr. Oren Amate, appreciate your time as always, sir.
Thank you very much, Jeff.